This episode highlights from the Future of Everything Festival, where Wall Street Journal editors and industry minds examine how advancements in science and tech are revolutionizing business, culture, and society. This was recorded in front of a live audience on May 9th at Spring Studios in Tribeca.
The Future of Everything, a look ahead from the Wall Street Journal with Jennifer Strong.
The future of money is already happening in China, where people have embraced payments, credit, and going cash-free. My colleagues, The Wall Street Journal's Aaron Back and Ken Brown of Heard on the Street, discuss what China's digital currency dominance looks like.
I happened to live in China for a bunch of years until recently. My colleague Aaron Back lived there longer than I did, and so we both saw this transition. Really, what we want to express to you is how we got there, what the path they took, and then where it's going to go from here. So here's Aaron. So Aaron, you moved to China in 2005. What was it like then?
So in 2005, it was basically a cash economy. Personal checks never really existed in China. Credit cards were, very low penetration in China. You paid for everything pretty much with cash. Including, I remember when I rented my first apartment in Beijing, I had to show up with like a shoebox full of cash, basically, to make a deposit for the apartment. And you would see people like on vacation checking into hotels with a purse full of bricks of cash. Yeah, it was annoying.
It's amazing when you're in China and anyone who's sort of traveled a lot, you end up with a bag of currency that you've, used and not finished in these different countries. And I was looking at what I have, and there's all these 1 yuan notes and 5 yuan notes, which are, very low denomination, and they're filthy. They're disgusting. The worst dollar that you've ever seen in the U.S., these things are worse because they were handled so much. They were used for so many transactions. So the change is staggering. So tell us what it looks like now.
So today, the big cities, Shanghai, Beijing, Shenzhen, are virtually cashless and virtually walletless, in fact. You basically just use your mobile phone to pay for anything. Two dominant platforms, Alibaba and Tencent, have Alipay and WeChat Pay. And I think the statistic is there was $9 trillion of mobile payments in 2016 in China, according to a Chinese research outfit, compared to just over $100 billion in the United States. So it's a staggering amount of mobile payments in China.
Now, the stories of how we got there are really interesting. So as Aaron said, Alibaba, which has Alipay, and Tencent, which has WeChat Pay, are the two dominant platforms. These companies are everywhere in China, the two of the three internet giants, Baidu being the third. Alipay was created not for the need of a virtual currency, really. It was created for the need of an escrow account. So Alibaba's biggest business is still Taobao, which is essentially an online marketplace, a free-for-all, sellers and buyers, a little bit like eBay. And Alibaba connected them. The problem is in China, there's this big trust deficit. We all know about frauds in China. There's a lot of distrust. And so they needed something to make buyers and sellers trust each other. And so they had this escrow system, which is essentially I buy, a shirt from somebody. I give my money to Alibaba. They hold it in escrow. I get the shirt. The shirt is okay. And they release the money to the seller. And that's how it worked. That was the start of Alipay. Now, Tencent got way behind. And Tencent has WeChat, which is this ubiquitous merger of what? Twitter and Facebook and
WhatsApp, all rolled into one.
All rolled into one. China has many people use many fewer apps in China, really down to just a few. WeChat was way, way behind, and they did a thing. In fact, Gaddy had a good slide a minute ago of the red envelopes that people give away, exchange on Lunar New Year. Every year you give 10 bucks, 20 bucks to your friends, to younger relatives, to your doorman. You end up with 100 of these things, and you give them out for the whole week, like Christmas here. And Tencent brilliantly created a system where you could give money to a bunch of your friends. And you'd give a set amount. This was 2014?
Yes, 2014 Chinese New Year.
So you could give, say, $100 to 5 friends, and it was divvied up, but whoever logged in to WeChat Pay first got more. And so everyone was rapidly signing up. People weren't signed up for WeChat Pay because Alipay was so dominant. Everyone signed up for WeChat Pay.
Alipay is designed around e-commerce needs, and WeChat Pay is designed around social needs. So WeChat Pay, is very efficient for splitting a check with your friends and things like that. We're seeing that now with, for example, Venmo in the United States. But in many respects, it's kind of copying WeChat Pay.
So these two platforms take off. and they have transformed the way people live in China. You can't underestimate how ubiquitous these are. Just give a few examples.
If you want to, say, use a bike share on a Chinese street, you take your phone, you have a QR code, or they have a QR code, you scan the QR code, the bike unlocks, and that's the entire process. You've paid for the bike, you have it. Splitting a check with friends is completely seamless. And then because you're doing this all through, for example, the WeChat platform, now WeChat knows where you spend your money, where you ride your bike, what you do, and so they can push offers to you, discount on the food that you order, and you know, things like that. So it really is transformative.
Food delivery is everywhere in China and totally seamless. I mean, you can be on a street corner and order McDonald's, and it'll be there in a couple of minutes. The guy will walk right up to you because it's all GPS. It's created new businesses. It has made things more efficient. So China had a need, right? There was no checks. There were very few credit cards. This really did fill a need. Aaron and I have to give a little pitch. Aaron and I work on the Herd on the Street at the Journal, which is we do commentary and analysis for the Wall Street Journal on tech, on banks, on the markets. And Aaron actually covers the U.S. banks. So his experience in China and his experience covering PayPal and all the big banks is perfect. The U.S., what need does this fill?
So in the U.S., it's quite different. I mean, there's sheer inertia because people are used to carrying their credit cards around and their credit card infrastructure is used by all the merchants. But what I think is stunning is the fees that people are paying still, that merchants are paying. Merchants are paying 2-3% for every single transaction, whereas in China, it's 0.6% when you use Alibaba or WeChat Pay. And, you know, that was talked about a bit this morning, but I think what they missed is the incentive structure is different because what's happened in today's market is that 2-3% is in many cases getting paid to the consumer. So the merchant pays the credit card network and the various banks that are a part of that transaction. And a lot of that today gets rebated to the consumer in the form of cashback rewards, travel rewards, etc. So in the United States today, people have a very strong monetary incentive to keep using their credit cards, which they'd never had in China. And so I think that's one thing that is holding all this back. When you think about in the United States, whether it's Apple Pay, Google Pay, whether it's your Starbucks app, your Dunkin' Donut app, I mean, most cases you're entering your credit card number or debit card number into that app. And so the fundamental gatekeepers of the payments infrastructure in the United States have not been disrupted, whereas in China they never really existed. So it was much easier to cut them out.
Yeah, so you talk to the people who are trying to disrupt this, and they keep saying they keep waiting for someone to figure out a way, an economic way and a technological way around Visa, MasterCard, these payment systems, American Express, which really do have a lock. And, you know, these rewards, I mean, I'm sure everyone here has a rewards card, and you know what you get, and you use your points and all that stuff. And so are you going to give that up for a seamless cash transaction? Why bother? Why pay?
You don't even have to. I mean, you know, if I want to pay with PayPal, with my mobile app, today the way it's set up is I can use my credit card to do that. But essentially, it's just a software skin on my phone that says PayPal or says Starbucks or says Chase Pay or whatever it is, but it's really just my credit card. And so the level of disruption that has occurred is so much lower now in the United States because of that.
The interesting thing, you know, you talk to Chinese who use these things and you say, okay, there's a privacy issue, right? I mean, literally WeChat Pay and Alipay know everything you've bought. And of course, you know, the government is well aware whenever they want to know this information, there's nothing really holding them back. And you say, you know, this is a society where arguably people should only use cash, right? A society where it's Orwellian in many respects. And people kind of roll with it in a sense of, we know they know, and frankly, there's nothing we're going to do about it, so we might as well go with it.
I don't think that's so different from the United States, though, Ken. I mean, Chase and American Express know everything that I spend money on,
right.
So and I accept that. So it's not, you know, it's not a deal breaker. I'm not going to start using cash for everything.
Right. So, Aaron, so a few years from now, so everyone, U.S. is just on the cusp of a digital transformation. What do you see here?
I mean, I think in 5 years, the U.S. will look like China in that people will not really be using cash or physical wallets at all in major metropolitan centers. I think it will be the same, and I think it will probably be QR code based because it's the simplest, most efficient technology. But what I don't know is what the economics of that are going to be. It's a huge multi-sided conflict right now where you have the credit card companies, you have the banks, you have the technology companies, you have the retailers, all with their own payments platforms. And it's really quite unclear who is going to be taking that share and what the fee structure is going to be. I agree with Dan's prediction this morning, Dan Schulman from PayPal, that those fees have to come down. Surely when there's that much competition, that means that the fee structure is going to have to come down. Merchants are not going to take paying 2 to 3% for everything forever. But who's going to be collecting the fees? Who's going to benefit? Who's going to dominate? It's impossible to say. I mean, it's frankly a bit of a mess in the United States. In China, you have two players. Everyone knows who they are. In the U.S., you have so many different players that it's, I think that's part of what's holding it back.
Is someone like Amazon the potential disruptor?
Not really. I mean, again, like my pay credentials in Amazon are my credit card. It's the same thing. So there's been no fundamental disruption.
But could they incentivize you? Is Amazon big enough, powerful enough, they could create an incentive structure and disrupt this? I mean, I'm looking for the disruptor,
perhaps.
Right?
I mean, you know, I only go to Starbucks so much. So I can use my Starbucks app. I get reward points from Starbucks, so I have an incentive to do a mobile payment through Starbucks. But is that really enough? It's just my daily coffee. Now, Amazon, I get a ton of stuff from Amazon. I maybe do my grocery shopping through Amazon. So it is possible that they could build up, you know, enough of an incentive structure to move people away from traditional payments.
What's China going to look like?
The mobile payment system in China has been given a regulatory sandbox where it is actually not part of the central bank's payment processing system. And that means that they have much less visibility into things like money laundering controls, capital outflows, and that's now changing. The central bank wants to set up a new clearing system for mobile payments this year. So there will be more regulation of mobile payments in China. I mean, when you have $9 trillion of payments and you're the government, you want to have visibility into that. So that will change. The other thing that's happening is Chinese people are taking that technology abroad now. So my favorite Chinese restaurant in New York, a place called Hot Kitchen, you see a lot of young, hip Chinese eating there. It's very authentic, modern Chinese food. And when you get your check, there's a WeChat QR code on the check. And, you know, I feel lame for pulling out a credit card, making the waiter come over, take the credit card, come back, write down how much I want to tip. It feels ridiculous. But, you know, I don't have a Chinese bank account anymore, so I don't have WeChat Pay. So, yeah, I'm the lame one at Hot Kitchen.
Well, on the note of the food recommendation, we're going to end the Herd on the Street segment here and the non-future segment of the program. Thank you.
The Future of Everything is a production of The Wall Street Journal. This episode was produced by Anthony Green, Brian Gutierrez, Kristen Schwab, and Laura Sim. John Wurdock is the executive producer of WSJ Podcasts. Stan Parrish is the editor-in-chief of The Future of Everything. We had help with this episode from The Wall Street Journal's Nikki Waller, Kim Last, and Joanna Stern. With special thanks to festival organizers Karen Annis, Catherine Sterling, Andrea Acosta, Robin Wood Saylor, and Anna Rafdal. Thanks for listening. I'm Jennifer Strong in New York.